Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the podcast of Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This is just one segment of today's show. You can hear all of our conversations about New York's vibrant cultural scene on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Song for the broken hearted. I ain't gonna be just a face in the crowd. You're gonna hear my voice, I'll shout it out loud. It's my life, and it's now or never. Ain't gonna live forever. I just wanna live while I'm alive.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and live online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. For nearly 50 years, Paul Anka has been a fixture in American music. He penned My Way for Sinatra, his own teen hit Diana, the somewhat later and more controversial She's Havin' My Baby, and the Tonight Show theme, among many, many others. And after years of working the casino circuit, sometimes thought of as being a retro act. But with his new album, simply titled Rock Swings, he has taken that image and spun it on its head. Rock Swings is a collection of popular songs of the 80s and 90s, re-envisioned Paul Anka style. Welcome to Soundcheck, Paul.
Thank you very much, John. Pleasure to be here.
So let me ask you, Nirvana, Soundgarden, Oasis, is this what's on your record player?
Well, it was, in different fashions. One has to realize, being the father of five girls, and I emphasize girls, you're totally on the pulse at all times. Being in the music industry, as I have been, as a writer and a publisher, in an industry that has consolidated itself, I was constantly aware of what was happening in the music industries. Ultimately, my friends either ran the companies or owned them or worked with the group. So, yeah, I was aware of each of them, and between all my kids and the awareness that I had, I was totally familiar with the music scene.
All right. Well, the five daughters, that answers actually a lot of questions,
That's
Paul.
That's right.
Now, this Bon Jovi piece that we heard at the top of the show, It's My Life, did you pick that song because it referred to My Way, the Sinatra song that you wrote, or was that just kind of a happy bonus?
Well, the real criteria, actually, was I tried to pick great rock groups from the 80s and 90s, and Bon Jovi was one of the biggest groups. And, you know, they'd sold a lot of records, and I tried to pick songs that would be familiar to people as they evolved or morphed out of the concept that I was working on. And that song kept coming back to me. I was rather reluctant to do it because of the My Way reference in it, as opposed to using it. Because it has occurred that some people thought that I put it in there because they couldn't hear the original lyric and thought that it was never part of the song. Mm. I ran into the group, and I know them, and you know they kind of asked me, you know, we're going to use that line in there, and we're using it. Is it okay? And I said, of course. So I was really more reluctant than using it, but it just, in my mind's eye as a musician, when I heard that song, you can hear how any song that has some structure to it will work in any genre that you put it in. And that song loomed large from Bon Jovi.
So now you mentioned the concept that you had in mind in putting this album together. How did you select these songs? I mean, certainly you had so many to choose from.
Yeah, there was just a lot. I mean, my drawer is still full. I think going back a few steps, I just come off of producing the Michael Bublé CD with David Foster. We'd found him and worked with him, and we realized there was a large window there for swing. And when the record company came to me and wanted to do a swing album with me, I said, fine, but not the standards. I think that it's been done to death, and there's too many artists doing them. So I said, there is a period, the 80s and the 90s, where there's some great material with that demographic of people who have now grown up. But a good song is a good song, a hit is a hit, and I liked what was coming out of the 80s and the 90s. Thus, I went in and I just took a bunch of Billboard charts, the music industry Bible, and I looked for top 10 artists. I looked for top 10 songs. And I just sat at the piano and played off of music sheets as opposed to the records. We, of course, listened to the records because it was humorous to see the before and after. But when you sit there with the music sheets and you try to fit them to your style, I didn't want anything tentative on the CD. So every song that I tried, once I found the groove to put it in that fit Anka, then it started to work itself out. There were certainly some that just didn't work, and those got thrown out.
Right. Well, one of the more surprising ones, we're speaking with Paul Anka, is, Paul, your rendition of Smells Like Teen Spirit, the the anthem by the late Kurt Cobain and Nirvana. Right. I mean, going from grunge to swing, on the surface at least, would seem to be kind of a stretch.
Yeah, it would seem to be. You know, of course, when you're talking to, you know, creative people, you know, we're able to do anything. I think there's probably parallels and equations to that, whether it would be Shakespeare or film or any other form of art. You know, people have in modern times utilized the content of the material, and, you know, it's received the same kind of attention. I didn't find it a huge problem other than the lyrics. I was very familiar with the band. I think, you know, he's a modern-day poet, if you will, and we saw some structure in the melody, and we felt where we could take it with the arrangement. And, you know, I guess the only area would be people are sensitive would be lyrically. I was totally familiar with, you know, where the song was coming from in the sense that it was, you know, a deodorant, and a lot of it is, you know, the way that he talks. And a lot of the song I couldn't use because it just didn't play honestly with me, and I didn't use it. But I wasn't afraid of it. You know, as long as people realize that, you know, you have to not put parameters on music, and you have to allow art to grow in any fashion, and if it's honest. And what I did with this CD was all the money went into the musicians, the studio, the engineers. The, you know, it's not a novelty record. Mm-hmm. Everything is top quality, and I tried to trust in the fact that there were people out there, radio people, critics, that, you know, that had some taste and that knew their music, that when they heard it and got past the original blush of Anka and rock tunes or teen spirits, when they listened to it, they'd say, wow, you know, there's some quality here and an honest intention. And it was refreshing to approach songs like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, on another level, there were songs that may not have been inviting as much controversy that really didn't work for me technically, and, you know, I just didn't go there.
All right, well, let's hear one of the places you did go to. Here's a little bit of Paul Anka's version of Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Load up my guns and bring your friends. It's fun to lose and to pretend. She's overboard, she's self-assured. Oh, no, I know a dirty word. Hello, 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 how low. Hello, 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 how low. With the lights out, less dangerous. Here we are now, entertain us. I feel stupid, contagious. Here we are now, entertain us. I'm a lotto, an albino, a mosquito, my libido, yeah.
That's Paul Anka and his version of Smells Like Teen Spirit. It really does swing, Paul. And I guess one of the interesting things about much of this record is the suggestion that a good song can exist on a number of different levels, maybe even ones that seem antithetical to the original intent of the song.
Absolutely. I mean, that's exactly the point. And let's not forget the arrangers here. You know, I learned a long time ago with Sinatra that you know, we're out front and we're the messenger, but we've always been very sensitive of having good people around us. And I've selected three great arrangers to really pull this off with me. And it's, you know, the musicians, I can't praise them enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, John Clayton did the arrangement of Smells Like Teen Spirit, much of the album arranged by Randy Kerber, who I think just, you know, is a genius at this sort of thing.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, you know, when Kurt Cobain sang the line, "Here we are now, entertain us," it was a snarl. It was a challenge.
Right.
When you sing it, it's like, all right, where's the party?
Right. Well,
and that, it works on both levels.
Well, exactly. But you know that line, that's very indigenous to him. He would come into a room at a party and say, "Here we are now, entertain us."
Mm.
That wasn't written for the song. You know, that's the way that he spoke, and when he'd walk in a room, that was his line: "Here we are, entertain us."
Wow.
Because Dave Grohl, you know, just came out recently. He saw me do it on the Letterman show, and he was just very complimentary about it and totally endorsed the treatment and everything. And, you know, we found out a lot of information about the background of the song and the group, but that's the way that Kurt talked.
So now, when you were putting this record together, again, the album's called Rock Swings, mm-hmm. were there songs you wanted to do but you couldn't get the rights to?
No, there were only songs that I wanted to do that just didn't come off. They didn't make the cut. We had no problem. You know, once a song is recorded and released, you can go in and record it, and you just get a license. But we had no problem like that. The problem, if there were any, and they weren't problems, they were just, you know, us trying to suss out if it was good enough, because I really wanted everything to be on the mark if I could. But there were songs that I just felt, as we got into them, that we had to throw away because it wasn't really swinging.
Right. You didn't want to force it. If the arrangement wasn't happening, you move on.
Yeah, I mean, songs like, you know, Basket Case, which I love the song, but I couldn't get off on that. I couldn't get off on Billie Jean. I knew Michael Jackson had to be represented, but as I started singing, and it was a great arrangement, by the way, as I sang the words Billie Jean and the word content, I started laughing. It just didn't work.
All right. Now, you mentioned you have five daughters and, you know, listening to, I mean, I'm sure out of all the bedrooms, all of this music had been blaring for much of the 80s and 90s. What did they think of this record?
Well, for the most part, you know, I tested it with them. They endorsed it. You know, they were not sure in the beginning, but as they saw it morphing and each one had a different song that they liked, and they got it. You know, it was at first they weren't sure what I was trying to do, but you know, as they heard the finished material or almost finished, and there were some songs that I was trying that they didn't like, and that was cool. You know, I didn't do them. Yeah. I just listened to a lot of people. We had a good production team, and my girls were, you know, three of them. Two of them lived in Europe, so it was quite difficult, long distance, obviously, but the ones that lived here with me were very helpful.
I would guess that as focus groups go, five of your own kids would be a pretty testing one.
Yeah, that's a focus group where I was walking on pins and needles.
We're speaking with Paul Anka and listening to some of Rock Swings. I wanted Paul to play a little bit of Jump, the Van Halen tune.
Mm-hmm.
You are clearly the lead voice here, but the whole band gets pressed into service. I mean, this really is kind of a party piece.
Well, it's, you know, I wanted to get that old band sound because of the groove that I put it in. You know, Jump, the Benny Goodman, and
right.
That old band style. You know, we went right to the point of going to Capitol Studios, where you get the best brass sound, where I've recorded, Sinatra's recorded.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found it in that bag, and I really felt it as that, you know, that old time band feel with the, you know, the modern application. I thought it'd be cool to have the band just give that old band chorus out. We tested it and it worked, as opposed to leaving it out. So, and that was one of the easiest songs, actually. You know, it's a great record. It's a, you know, it's a good song. I think it's an even better and interesting song the way we've done it. I mean, I love the original record, but that's a great case and something that can really swing, and because rock theoretically doesn't swing, you know, it rocks. But that song real came easy, and the one point on it was that it's the only song where I used a lick from the original record, because if you listen to everything else, the chords and, you know, the whole framework has changed. But I love the original lick on the guitar, and that's the only time that I've used it, but it worked quite well.
Well, and I agree with you. I like your version better than the Van Halen original. Let's hear a little bit of Paul Anka's Jump.
Oh, can't you see me standing here? I got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. Can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump.
Jump.
Might as well jump.
Jump.
Go ahead, jump.
Jump.
Go ahead and jump.
Jump. Hey, you.
Hey, babe.
how you been?
We're speaking with Paul Anka on Soundcheck. Paul, it sounds like the illegitimate love child of the Count Basie Band and Van Halen.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
So now, you turn 64 tomorrow.
July 30th is my birthday, and 64 years old and loving it.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much.
So when you wrote Diana and recorded it, you must have been what, 15, 16, something like that?
I wrote it when I was 15 years old and recorded it when I was 16.
Holy cow. And, I mean, if you would look down the road, you know, I mean, of course, what teenager thinks, I'll be doing this 40 years from now, but did you think that?
No, there was some concern there. We certainly started sensing it was a disposable society, not unlike we are today.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Darin and a few of us felt that, you know, it was coming to an end. We had to look at it and say, you know, where are we going? And we weren't sure. And I bought my master's back from the record company just to keep my life together, hoping that it would continue. We knew that we had to evolve into, you know, some kind of a new form, and the only thing around for us to look up to were the Rat Pack, you know, Sinatra and that group.
Right.
Hard rock hadn't hit. The Beatles I knew in Europe, you know, I'd spent time with them, worked with them over there, but because we weren't a media-driven society, no one had any idea that they were coming, and when they did, they just blew us off the radio. But I didn't have any vision that it would last this long. I only had the very strong conviction that if I did things right and continued to write songs and be the performer, that there'd be a more solid foundation under me, and that I had a chance to really evolve into stages. And it really got somewhat confirmed to me when I wrote My Way. Then I sensed the feedback from the public as to, you know, what I was about and how they were embracing me. So My Way was more of the turning point for me than anything else.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you made some very savvy moves. I mean, you just mentioned the fact that you bought back your masters. I mean, Diana and songs like that. You were young when you made that decision, and many artists go through their whole careers without realizing how important something like that can be.
Well, you know, I learned at a young age to surround myself with some good people. I never wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. I wanted to learn, and I just started focusing. You know, if you have to really kind of take charge of your life, all of us, in anything that we do, so that the decisions we make, you know, come from us. I'd seen too many, you know, of my fellow performers kind of manipulated by people and, you know, and I just didn't want to be one of them. And I felt that if the record company didn't believe in me, as I did, that I wanted to buy back my work. And I took a chance, and, you know, it's worked out for me.
Yeah. Well, now, over 30 years ago, I mean, we're talking about a new record that both swings and rocks, but 30 years ago you recorded this song, Piangero per Te, which,
yeah,
which really rocks.
That's part of my whole Italian arsenal of stuff.
Mm-hmm. The title means To Cry for You?
Right, yeah, Crying for You. Part of my philosophy years ago, only because I was traveling throughout the world in 56, 57, 58, that it was going to become a global community for sure, but much closer, and that music had an incredible magic and strength to it. And coming from Canada, as I did, and speaking French, I really got into cultures of other countries. So I went to Italy, and I lived there, and commuted between New York and Italy, and lived over in Rome, and I just wrote a lot of songs in Italian, recorded only in Italian. Ennio Morricone, a great arranger, was my arranger. And I realized then that I had to record in all these languages, Italian being my favorite. And and that was one of my big hits over there, along with a song called Ogni Volta.
So Ennio Morricone, the guy who became famous for his film scores, for The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and the other Sergio, is he the arranger on this song?
I don't know if he's the arranger on that one. He did Ogni Volta. He did a lot of my early hits. He started with us at RCA Italiana. We all started together. It was a brand new company, a new building, and he was just incredible back then. And of course, we know where he's at today. But he was my A&R director and my arranger.
Wow. Well, let's hear some of this early song from Paul Anka, my guest on Soundcheck. This is Piangero per Te.
Thank you.
piangerò per te, piangerò per te. Ma so che è inutile ormai, tu non mi tornerai. Piangerò per te, riderò perché io so che ti ho perduto ormai e spero tornerai.
That is a younger Paul Anka, Piangerò per te. Do you remember what year that was?
Yeah, that was 1963 or 4.
Wow. So over 40 years ago.
That's a crying little boy.
There's some wailing going on there.
Yeah, that was the style. Well,
now, did you feel, I mean, maybe that when hard rock came in the late 60s, I mean, it's taken you a while to do this swing version of these recent rock songs. Did you feel that maybe the music business had moved to a place where you felt left behind at that point?
Well, I certainly felt the change. I knew I wasn't a part of the current pack, but I knew that I was part of a group that could always come back with a hit record at the right time, being the writer. Even though it had changed so radically, you know, philosophically and sociologically, I kind of accepted the fact that every generation needed their own. It certainly wiped us off the radio, but I had, you know, there were some stabilizers and things occurring for me that really kept me up morale-wise. You know, The Longest Day and Tonight Show Theme and then the Sinatra. So, you know, I was viable. I was in there. I was working. I was in Vegas. I was one of the staple acts, me and Darren. So I wasn't really afraid of that. I felt that, you know, everything always comes around in our industry. You know, really amplifying your point, I knew through the years that I could never have attempted anything like this. Everything is timing.
Right.
I think at this point in my career, I'm able to pull something off like this with a lot of integrity. Years ago, I don't think I could have done it. I think that along with this package and the quality and the content, you know, that, you know, just people look at you and they say, well, the guy's been around. He comes from that group of people. He knows how to do that. You know, unlike a lot of kids today who may make fine records, but, you know, they don't know who Nelson Riddle is and half those songs they've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a credibility there. But years ago, I didn't have any of those fears because every decade, you know, I represented myself for the top 50 records. So it just grew from that.
Right. So a couple of years ago wouldn't have been the time. The time wouldn't have been right for this. You know, it would have been difficult to avoid the kind of the kitsch factor. But now with rock artists covering standards, I mean,
exactly.
Rod Stewart doing his stand.
Exactly.
You've gone the other direction. You've
exactly.
made new standards out of these recent songs.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, everyone has to understand that a good song's a good song and allow them to breathe, you know.
Mm-hmm.
As a society, we tend to put things in compartments because we have that, I don't know, maybe a subliminal sense to make things neat. But, you know, I kind of disagree with some of that. I think that music has to live and people have to be allowed to use art as they see fit.
Yeah, music is a wonderfully messy thing. Will you be taking some of this wonderful mess on tour?
For sure. We were at the Montreal Jazz Festival, the largest in the world, the featured performer up there, and we took the big band up there. It worked incredibly well. We shot a TV special and a DVD, and we start our tour on the East Coast first week of August. We then continue right through September, and I start promotion of this in Europe, but this tour goes right through Germany in November.
All right. Paul Anka, a real pleasure speaking with you this afternoon on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
John, my pleasure. Love the program, and I thank all of you and all my fans for all the years of support they've given me. I appreciate it very much.
Paul Anka, my guest on Soundcheck. The album is called Rock Swings. It's on Verve Records.
I want the truth to be said. I know this much is true. I know this much is true.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast of Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This was just one of the show's segments. You can hear everything we do on demand at WNYC.org.
Check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.